Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. As always, we're kicking off the week with a look ahead to the art exhibitions that might take your fancy. And today, we're focusing on New York. Over the next 15 minutes or so, we'll be going between the Met, Met Brewer and MoMA to discuss the art that needs to be kept on your radar. And to make sense of it all is the art critic, Charlotte Burns, who joins me now. Charlotte, welcome to the show. We're going to begin today at the Met Brewer for an exhibition of work by the American photographer Diane Arbus. It's called Diane Arbus in the Beginning, and it features 100 photographs by the artist, focusing on the period of her life between 1956 and 1962. Charlotte, why this particular seven-year span in focus here?
Well, this is the first exhibition that's been drawn from the Met's Diane Arbus archive, which was gifted by the artist's daughters, Dune and Amy, in 2007. So it's focusing on the first 7 years she worked as an artist, because before that, her and her husband had been working as photographing fashion, and she'd been a stylist on those things rather than actually picking up the camera in a serious way herself. And most of the works in this show had been stored in boxes in her basement darkroom and hadn't been discovered until after her death, and then weren't catalogued until around a decade after that.
And had they been on show before?
No. Most of these haven't really been seen, and if they have been shown, they've been shown more in the context of things that came before the works that we know. So a sort of supporting material to the more famous Arbus works. Because after 1962, she used a different camera, and a lot of the works that we know and recognise, this sort of very still portraits with all other kind of background details receding, that's not really present in these earlier works. This is a different camera, but you see her playing with the medium and playing with her subject and getting closer to the Arbus that we recognise.
What are the subjects of the photos?
Subjects of the photos, I mean, Arbus is famous for taking pictures of life's freaks and weirdos and people on the margins and women and children in parks. She takes pictures of old people. She takes pictures of contortionists, tattooed people, you know, tattooed to the extent that their entire body's covered, giants, midgets. She's concerned with the normal and even in the abnormal becoming normal, and she finds these, the mythic really, in moments of the ordinary and in ordinary people.
And were these photographs posed for?
Yeah, well, at the beginning, what you see is that she wasn't actually asking people to pose. She's set apart from a lot of other photographers, because most photographers that we recognise and celebrate from this period are photographers who catch people anonymously, and they catch people in these unguarded, candid moments. Whereas Arbus, especially later, she worked towards this way of engaging with people. She went from being an outsider to being a kind of temporary, privileged insider. And you see her making her way towards that. So at the beginning, she has a few pictures in this show where you see, you know, women. She's looking at women, and the idea of the female gaze seems to be important. And a lot of these women don't know that she's looking at them. So a lot of them are photographs of women or young girls or old ladies being looked at. And that changes, and what we see is a focus from Arbus on really engaging with the sitter, and the sitter knowing that they're being engaged with, and them looking directly at the camera or being the subject in a way that's definitely not spontaneous anymore.
Mm-hmm. So that's Diane Arbus, and she is at the Met Brewer. Now, let's move on to the main building of the Met for Manus Ex Machina, Fashion in an Age of Technology. So this explores the relationship between tech and the making of clothes, exhibiting clothes from the early 20th century until now. So Charlotte, what do we have on display here?
It's a really gorgeous exhibition. It's been constructed with the Met and the architectural firm OMA, and it's a very elegant tutorial taking us through the history of haute couture with work done by hand and work done by machine. And this exhibition is really suggesting, its thesis is that the traditionally oppositional relationship between man and machine is now undergoing a profound shift. And instead of being these things that are at odds with each other, one being better and one being worse, now we're seeing collaborations and pushing the boundaries of creativity through this collaboration, reconciliation of the two techniques, working together in ways that they hadn't previously to create garments that probably were never imaginable before.
Mm. Now, there's a huge range of designers on show. Give us some examples.
Well, the centerpiece of the exhibition is an absolutely resplendent wedding dress by Karl Lagerfeld for Chanel's 2014-15 autumn winter collection, which was inspiration for the exhibition. It's this huge train, this gorgeous train. And this is an interesting example of how this exhibition came together. And this, you see the thesis for the show in this one dress, because the dress itself is a machine sewn dress made from scuba knit, which is an entirely artificial material that holds its shape very well. Karl Lagerfeld described it as haute couture without the haute couture. It's sort of, it's not actually made. It's sort of machine sewn in this actually relatively easy way, but material itself is complicated. And the design on the train, which is really the showstopper, was sketched by hand and then manipulated on a computer to give an appearance of sort of random Baroque pixelated patterns. And then it was initially hand-painted with gold metallic pigment, then machine-printed with rhinestones, and then hand-embroidered with pearls and gemstones. So through this collaboration of machine and handmade elements, there was 450 hours of work, and it's this absolutely insane dress that's at the centre of this circular exhibition. You walk around this dress and there are walls constructed in a sort of oval around this dress. It's a centerpiece. And all around this, the rest of it's split into sections based on traditional haute couture methods. So we see the toiles, the sort of early structures that create the beginnings of a dress. And they're the, you know, how the dress is made and the garment is cut down in its original form. But also we see more contemporary designers sort of playing with that and making that garment the finished garment. Mm. We see the tailoring and drapery. So there's interesting examples here, a Chanel suit from the 1960s, which was machine sewn. So this exhibition is also suggesting that this idea of the machine and the handmade collaborating has been actually been going on for a long time, because haute couture didn't actually really become a thing in that recognized way with that term until the advent of the machine, the machine sewer.
Mm. It's had some great reviews, and one of it comparing it along with the music that goes with it as a kind of holy order, that it feels a little bit like a temple to making.
I mean, absolutely. It's sort of, it's very serious, you know, it's very self-serious. You walk in and there's this great soundtrack. It's a Brian Eno soundtrack. Very calm, this architectural set designed by OMA. And it's all very reduced and contemplative, and you walk around it with these objects on show. And the museum has long been seen as our sort of temple, as you know, society in the West has moved away from religion. We've moved more towards these temples of culture. And, you know, at the Met right now, you can see that temple being dedicated to fashion and to haute couture.
Finally, let's head to the Museum of Modern Art, which is currently housing work by post-war American artist Bruce Conner. The show's called It's All True, and the work ranges from photography to sculptures with a rather dark focus. Charlotte, tell us a little bit more about Conner.
This exhibition was a revelation to me. I knew Conner's work a little bit, but this is the first comprehensive retrospective of his work, and there are more than 250 objects here. And it shows the astonishing diversity that he created work. I mean, he runs the gamut from assemblage, avant-garde films. He was a draftsman, a performance artist, a prankster, a photographer, a sculptor, everything, really. He really tried his hand at pretty much every form of art making, and he was excellent at all of them. And this exhibition is really wonderful. I would suggest anybody go see it if they can.
Mm. So he works in a range of mediums across it.
The exhibition begins with a work called A Movie from 1958, when Conner was 25. And apart from the title shot, which says this is a film by Bruce Conner, every scene in the 12-minute movie is secondhand. It's all found material. And you have this orchestral soundtrack against it, which is sort of at odds with the work. We see, you know, man's folly and foolishness and, you know, lifelong obsessions of Conner's with the idea of destruction and chaos and sort of absurdity. And those things are all in this movie, which is incredibly ambitious. Nobody was really working in this way. Going around this exhibition, you can see how so many contemporary artists must have been looking at Conner for their inspiration. So whether it's filmmakers, whether it's artists like Rudolf Stingel, it's so fascinating to see his work and how much it must have been an inspiration for so many later artists.
Mm. Some of the sculptures, such as Child, or Looking Glass, and Angels, tell us about that.
Child is incredibly dark. It's a 1959 black assemblage sculpture of a wax child who's strapped to a high chair and wrapped in nylon. And this sort of relates to several things that were going on in Conner's work. He had as one of his tropes this idea of the female and as being dangerous, this, you know, sort of femme fatale who would lure you to your death and out of your senses. And this kind of idea of the female as a sort of spider weaving a web around you. And he used a lot of nylon in some of his assemblages in the 1950s and early 60s. And this use of nylon is like very creepy, to be honest. It creates a very dusty look on all of his works. And someone said that it's like bumping into death, and that's really what this suite of works feels like. You have these black sculptures that are made from wax with nylon elements of what appear to be sort of waxy, decaying corpses that have suffered some kind of horrific injury and death. And this work was a work that Connor made as a protest piece against the execution by death penalty of the rapist and thief Carol Chessman. Chessman was a rapist and a thief, but he wasn't a murderer, and Connor found it perverse that he would be murdered when he hadn't actually murdered, and he decided to take a stance against this by creating this work. He saw Chessman as a victim of his society, as a child who'd been destined for this sort of torturous life and death. And the piece caused notoriety when it was born, and it's also a fascinating piece from a conservation point of view, because it's been very difficult to keep this work alive.
Looking Glass and Angels, they're sort of part of the same theme, really, aren't they?
So, yeah, those wax works are. But talking of angels, there are these other works that Connor made where he exposed his body to light using the material, and the outlines of his shape appear as this sort of angelic silhouette, these life-sized panel works that you walk into a room and see as a sort of counterpoint to the death. And much of his work is very oppositional. If you took one position, he liked to explore another. He's really an incredibly diverse artist, really restless mind, and very focused on this idea of creativity and destruction, which we see in pieces like Crossroads, which is a 6-minute meditation in a filmic form on the atomic bomb. And this is a subject that he kept going back to. You know, at some point in the 60s, he and his wife had moved to Mexico because they thought it was a better place to be when the bomb dropped. He was quite convinced that, you know, we were living in apocalyptic times. And he found previously classified government documentation of the first atomic test to have taken place after the Second World War, which was in the summer of 1946. And his work comes back to this idea of religion. He had an interesting relationship with religion, where he said everything was either a sleight of hand or, you know, in fact, a kind of miracle. And he seemed divided on which he thought it was, and perhaps he thought it was both at the same time. And this is a, you know, very... Someone described it as a kind of altarpiece of the exhibition. It's a sort of pinnacle in the sense that you see a lot of his obsessions coming together in this work. I think there are only 24 shots, but they range in length from seconds to minutes. And what we see is a bomb being tested and these billowing mushroom clouds spewing forth from the ocean in these quite beautiful and absolutely horrifying shots that the government took documenting the atomic bomb.
It sounds absolutely extraordinary. Bruce Connor, It's All True, is on at MoMA until the 2nd of October. So that's the end of this week's show. Thanks very much to you, Charlotte Burns. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us at the same time tomorrow when Andrew Muller will be joined by Nick Luscombe to talk music. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks for listening.